What would prompt market players to conclude the world this week so far is a safer place? We'll have an explanation. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. After the Dow rose 259 points yesterday, 1.2%, the index is up another 65 points this morning, 0.3%. The S&P and the NASDAQ are up by similar percentages now. As people take on more risk into their portfolios, they're selling bonds with the yield on the 10-year note up at 2.17%. Let's consult economist Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives in New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so conventional wisdom part one about what's driving market sentiment. The storm known as Irma was horrendous, right? But it could have been worse. That bringing some cheer to the market?
Absolutely. I mean, it was bad, but it was projected to be, you know, another storm of the century, and that didn't really come to pass. So there is some relief there, I would say.
We're also hearing North Korea is part of this risk-on attitude, people buying stocks in the last 2 days. The UN adopted sanctions against North Korea that weren't quite as tough as the U.S. was pushing for.
The word was that the U.S. sort of backed down in their push for more aggressive sanctions. So we got sanctions, but it's not sort of the threat of escalating it to a new level, and therefore a little bit less threat of a nuclear war makes markets happy.
Now, you pointed out to me earlier when I called you that you're also looking at China.
Yeah. We've gotten another surge of strength out of China. The Chinese data has been robust, and that ripples out to the global manufacturers and is also something definitely, I think, supporting market sentiment.
All right. Julia Coronado, founder of Macro Policy Perspectives, thank you for this.
My pleasure.
At the Frankfurt Motor Show 2 years ago, the news was dominated by Volkswagen's diesel cheating scandal. Well, today, exhibitors at that show are trying to keep the focus on the electrification of their fleets. Mercedes and VW each pledged today to make sure each of their model lines has an electric or hybrid option. Mercedes showed off a small SUV today that can be fueled either by hydrogen or by plugging it into the wall. Still, Germany's environment minister today challenged the industry there, saying that Japan, the U.S., and China are ahead on electric technology. Now, when you look at the air in big cities like Beijing, L.A., or London, you can see an argument for electric. I spoke to the BBC's Theo Leggett, who's at the Frankfurt Car Show now.
With an electric car, you still get pollution because power still has to be generated in power stations, but it doesn't happen at street level. But that said, we shouldn't get carried away with the hype. I've been speaking to executives here who have been touting electric cars, but they openly admit the charging infrastructure, the ability to build all the batteries that are going to be needed, that's not actually there yet. So for a few years at least, we're going to need ordinary internal combustion engines and hybrids to fill the gap until the electric cars are actually ready to take over.
In Frankfurt, Germany, the BBC's Theo Leggett. After allegations of sexual harassment and reports of a toxic workplace culture, there's news the CEO chairman of a prominent financial technology startup is stepping down. Mike Cagney runs Social Finance, or SoFi. It's not hard to find companies with self-inflicted messes. Uber comes to mind. I wanted to consult Adam Grant, a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Management, who's written about resilience. How can an embattled outfit move forward without losing the good people? Hey, Adam.
Glad to be back.
This puts a lot of pressure on the people who are keeping the trains running within the organization, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, I think the temptation is to go into firefighting mode and just focus all your energy on the crisis. But you do actually have to continue producing your products, delivering your services, running your processes. And I think it's important to stabilize that along with dealing with the crisis.
And not just that, but also keeping the good people. Because when your company's a mess, people start looking around.
Yeah, and the first people to leave are usually your star performers who have an easy time finding offers elsewhere. And in fact, might have already been turning down some of those outside offers and then start thinking, wait a minute, maybe I should jump off this ship before it sinks.
Can you think of a business that found itself in a mess that managed this in an appropriate way?
I think it's easier to find the examples of organizations that have royally screwed this up. You know, when you look at the systematic mistakes companies make, you say, look, you've got to establish some degree of procedural justice, which basically means, look, even if the outcome was bad, the process was fair. And usually procedural justice has three components. One is you make it clear that there is a neutral decision maker at play. The second is giving people a voice. The third one is making sure that people actually know, you know, what are you actually trying to accomplish here? Are you after, you know, maximizing profits, preventing losses, repairing trust?
Now, what we've been talking about in part here, but not fully addressing, is this issue of layoffs, downsizing, often that accompanies a company in crisis, right?
It's the knee-jerk reaction of a lot of executives. And yet, there's a massive study of over 5,000 downsizings over half a decade at S&P 500 firms. They didn't, on average, improve profits, and they didn't do any better than the firms that were able to avoid downsizings through alternatives like pay cuts or restructurings. And when you break that down, downsizings, they just destroy motivation and productivity. You begin to focus really narrowly on how do I keep my job as opposed to how do I help the company through this crisis. You lose trust and loyalty in management. And then I think the craziest part is that roughly 80% of the time, managers end up having to replace the very people that they fired.
Well, there you have it from a management professor. Adam Grant's latest book, co-authored with Sheryl Sandberg of Facebook, is called Option B, Facing Adversity, Building Resilience and Finding Joy. Adam, thank you.
Thanks, David.
We're also covering the D22. That's the not-so-secret code name for the high-end phone Apple is set to unveil today. Some think it might cost $1,000, but that's really only an interest-free payment of $1 a month for 83 years. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.